بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. اللهم افتح علينا بحكمتك وانشر علينا برحمتك يا ذا الجلال والإكرام. اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله في كل لمحة ونفس عدد ما وسعه علم الله. يا عليم علمنا من علمك ما ترضى به عنا ولا تؤاخذنا بما تعلمه منا. يا حليم خلقنا بخلق الحلم وحققنا بحقائق العلم. سبحانك لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. What we will do today is look at some of the wisdoms of Ibn Ata'Allah, some of the aphorisms of Ibn Ata'Allah. Inshallah, we will do this. I'm not sure how many times it will be able to meet, but perhaps three or four times during this month, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. And I thought that it would be good just to pick some of the wisdoms instead of beginning at the beginning, where, you know, we probably wouldn't get very far. So today I thought that we would begin with wisdom number 22. Okay, and this wisdom is مَا مِن نَفَسٍ تُبْدِيهِ إِلَّا وَلَهُمْ قَدَرٌ فِيكَ يُمْضِيهِ. That there is no breath that you make, there's no breath that you take. Literally, he says, there's no breath that you sort of, that you make appear. In other words, that you give existence to, that you bring out of the unseen and you make it part of reality by doing it. So his expression here is a very special expression. He could just say there's no breath that you take, but he's not saying that. He's saying it's a breath that you make apparent, tubdihi, meaning that, you know, that this was something ordained for you, and this is something now that you do, and in doing it, you bring it into the world of existence. So he says, there's ma min nafasin tubdihi, there is no breath that you take, إِلَّا وَلَهُ, but that God has in it قَدَرٌ, a destiny, يُمْضِيهِ, which He fulfills. Okay, and I forgot to do this, but let's begin by reciting Al-Fatiha to Ibn Ata'Allah As-Sakandari with the intention that God raise his status higher and higher, and especially that God give us blessing from Ibn Ata'Allah, and that He give us the keys to understand these wisdoms and to apply them in our lives. Al Fatiha. So here he's talking about the breaths, and Ibn Ata'Allah doesn't do that very much in the Hikam. One of the points that the commentators note in their comments on this beautiful wisdom is that your life is measured in terms of breaths. So, you know, we live in a civilization that is dominated by time, you know, by watches, by clocks. And we tend to think of things in terms of seconds and minutes and hours and days and so forth. How many years do I have? But the commentators say that in the divine balance, your life is measured out in terms of breaths. So you have so many breaths to take, and then that's the end of your life, bi'ithnillahi ta'ala. So, one of the benefits that we can get from this wisdom is to be aware of our breaths and to breathe. And, you know, breathing, which is one of the most basic things that we do in order to live, it's one of the things that often we don't even think about. But it's like he's saying, in every breath that you take, in every breath that you inspire and you bring out, you know, there is a divine destiny for you. That, you know, this simple moment that is in the breath that you take, you know, this is a unit of your destiny. You know, so this means be aware. You know, wake up. Pay attention to what you're doing. And take these most basic things seriously. You know, attend to them. You know, and every breath that I take, every breath you take is significant. Every breath you take is a divine act, you know, of God, you know, guiding you on your destiny. So, this enables us, this kind of awareness enables us, you know, to be, to try to live in the present. You know, to try to live in our breaths. You know, to not be living, you know, in a world of futurities, of the things I'm going to do, the things I intend to do, the aspirations I have. You know, but be aware of the present moment in the breath that you take. And the nefes is when you breathe in and you breathe out. That is a nefes. Okay, so that is a unit of destiny. It is something that is very significant, you know, for you. And so be aware of that. Live in your breaths. People who are depressed are people that don't breathe. You know, when you're depressed, as we all are from time to time, train yourself to, first of all, pay attention to your breathing. Are you breathing or not? And usually people who are depressed, they breathe really little. They breathe very, very little. Just the minimum. It's almost as if they were on the verge of dying. And again, it's like, breathe deep, because this is the moment of, you know, your life. Breathe in and breathe out. First of all, it's really good for your health. You know, this is one of the elements of good health, to breathe in deeply. To breathe out fully. You know, it purifies you. It fills you with air. It enables you to get out toxins. You know, and also it's very good for your spirit. You know, because it brings life into you. You know, when you're confronted with depression in yourself, or, you know, when you meet a person who's depressed, you know, one of the things that you can do is just tell them to breathe. A few months ago, I met a man who is going through real big problems. May Allah cure him and may Allah bless him. And he's just so depressed. He can't do anything. And I just was watching him right there in front of me, talking to me. And I said, "You're not breathing." look at you. He's just like, and then it's like, you know, you're making your life speed up. You're taking these tiny little breaths, and each one of them is a destiny. So like, breathe in deep, breathe in deep, breathe out, and inshallah, you'll live a long time, and you'll be happy, and you'll be awake, and you purify yourself. So in this hikmah, and this is the only one in the wisdoms of Ibn Atla Allah, he brings attention to the breath. The breath. Breathe. Breathe in. Breathe out. Pay attention to this. Wake up. This is such a beautiful gift. You know, the ability that you have to be alive. You know, to breathe in and to breathe out. And don't neglect this. Don't overlook this. You know, how many are the blessings that we have that we don't pay any attention to? Our eyes, our ears, our breath, our feeling, and so forth. But in every breath that you breathe, there is a qadr. There is a special destiny for you that God is fulfilling. You know, when we think of destiny in our lives, we think of big things. Like, when will you get married? Whom will you marry? You know, how many children will you have? What will be, you know, the school you go to? What degree will you get? What is in store in your career? We think of the big landmarks that we go through in our lives. But what we are being taught in this wisdom is that pay attention to every step you take, to every breath you make, you know, to every moment you live. And even though there's nothing happening new that is remarkable to you, this is also a destiny. This is a qadr that is measured out for you. So awareness of that then brings you to awareness of yourself, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. And awareness of, you know, every moment that you spend, everything that you do. And also one of the benefits of this is, you know, being aware of how important the least things are in your life. That, you know, God creates you. God ordains you to be. And, you know, every moment that you live, every thought that you think, everything that you do, all of this is recorded. And all of this is very important. You know, we are the creatures of God, you know, who are created to be in this world, you know, for something that is cosmic. Okay, so be conscious of yourself. Be in yourself. Be aware of yourself. Do you have any questions? Anything that you'd like to ask? Yes.
So, how should we be breathing on a regular basis? Should we be consciously breathing deeply? Or
how should you be breathing? Again, you know, you're free to breathe any way you want to. There's no wajibat of breathing that I know about. But especially in terms of health, it's very important to breathe deeply. To breathe into your lungs and to breathe out. And inshallah, you do that with thankfulness that you can breathe. You know, that your lungs are not obstructed, that they're not filled. And it's really good for you. It's really good for you. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, confronts us as human beings in the world today, you know, is the idea that, you know, there are so many people you know, the world is, you know, filled with billions of people, and, you know, I'm just an average person, I'm just an ordinary person. And, you know, what other people do, like leaders or teachers or, you know, prominent people, that this is important, you know, and what I do is, like, relatively insignificant. You know, I make my prayers and I fast my obligatory prayers and fast and things like that. But also, I mean, one of the values of this hikmah is that, you know, you must think of everything you do as extremely important. These are things that have been created by God, that have been willed by God. So get into them, you know, think about them. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. And, you know, is there anything else that you'd like to say? Anything you'd like to ask? Okay, so I wanted to begin with that. And inshallah, may Allah Azza wa Jal enable us to be aware of our breaths and to be aware of all of the blessings that He's given us. And, you know, may He let us live our lives in His presence. You know, this is what living in the breaths is about. It's about, you know, being present in yourself. Being present in the time that you are, in the place that you are. Okay? And not to live like in another world of, you know, what I'm going to do this evening, what I'm going to do tomorrow, the things I want to do next year, or worrying about the past. You know, the ordinary human being is torn between all sorts of, you could say, illusory considerations. You know, feeling regret about things in the past, worrying about things in the past, maybe living in the past, like the glories of the past, you know, in some cases how great certain things were and how maybe they're not so good now. Or, you know, more frequently, maybe we live in terms of the future, of things that we want to do, places that we want to go. You know, the spiritual path, you know, is one of, you know, getting in the present moment, you know, being where you are, being aware of the situation that you are in, being aware of yourself, your breaths, and everything else about you, but also being aware of the people that are with you, of the needs of the people that are with you. So, you know, being conscious of your breaths, that in every breath that you make, every breath you take, you know, that there is a special destiny just in that breathing. You didn't create that. God created that for you. You acquired it. So, you know, that has the spiritual effect of anchoring you in the present moment. Living in the present moment. Not living in your dreams or your ideas or your fears or your expectations or anything else. Okay, that's really, really important. And that means also, you know, to be, you know, thankful for what you have right now. You know, instead of like, you know, when I get this, when I go there, when this time is up, I'll be really happy. You know, this thing is coming up, this will be so good. No, I mean, where are you right now? And, you know, the obligation to obey Allah, Azza wa Jal, and to be His servant, you know, this is an obligation that is very much in the present tense, right now. You know, and, you know, there is, what is the right of God upon me right in this moment? You know, being where I am, being with the people that I'm in, being with the people that I'm with. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, one of his chief characteristics is the fact that he is always in presence. He's always in the present moment. He's living in the present moment. He's not living in some dream of the future. or, you know, some vision of the past. And so therefore, if you were with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, you would see, as he related to his companions, that he relates to you perfectly one-on-one. Because there's nothing else to preoccupy him. There's nothing else to take his time. That you are here in the present moment, just like the breath. And so therefore he turns to you, and he gives you his time. Now, this is also the way that we should be. You know, live in the present moment. Be aware, even of the breath that you're taking, and of the miraculous nature of that breath. And this is a moment of your destiny. Your destiny is measured out by that, not by minutes. You know, not by minutes or just a social convention, but by your breaths. Live in the present moment. And this is also the characteristic of the men and women of God, you know, of the great saints. You know, that they live in the present. And therefore they're aware of what they see. And for that reason, they see very much. You know, whereas a lot of us, you know, we're living somewhere else. And this is, it's not an act of disobedience, it's an act of ghafla. It's an act of negligence. But this is the moment that God created. This is the place that He put you. أَقَامَ الْعِبَادَ فِي مَا أَرَى. He, you know, put His servants where He willed them to be. So God willed you to be in that place right now. So what then should you be doing as God's servant to fulfill that obligation? You know, have a good opinion of God. Have a good opinion of the people around you. Pay attention to your surroundings. Be alive. Be aware. Be awake. May Allah give us this attribute. And again, this is what makes the saints of God, you know, so unique. That they live in the present tense. And for this reason, even when great difficulties happen, it's not so difficult for them. Because they are in the present. And, you know, when great joy happens also, they take it in fully and they give thanks for it. This is also why in a lot of our Islamic languages, we refer to the companions of the Prophet ﷺ, or we refer to people that we admire as Habra or Hazrat. Hazrat, we will say Hazrat Umar, Hazrat Abu Bakr. And the word Habra means what? The Habra is what?
The presence.
It's the presence, meaning that Sayyidina Umar, because of the blessing of the Prophet ﷺ in his life, he lived in the present with God, aware of God in every breath he took, in every step he made. Okay, and this is the quality of the great awliya. They are a hadra, they are a hazrat. Those Sufis who do things they call the hadra, you know, they do that in order to attempt to be in the present moment. That's what it's about. To be in the present moment with themselves, with their breaths, and with their Lord, and never to be unconscious of, you know, their Lord. So you make the present moment your ship, you know, on the sea of your destiny, and you never get off of that ship into the water, you know. And, you know, you relate to the future in terms of the present. It's not as if we don't care about the future. You know, we have plans for the future. We have plans for the classes today and classes tomorrow. You have plans for things you have to do. You have responsibilities in your job and so forth. But nevertheless, we do that in terms of being rooted in the present moment. And also fulfilling the obligations of the present moment first. You know, instead of overlooking them. That, you know, say a person comes to you with a need. You know, Allah brought that person here with the need. And you had something else you wanted to do. So what should really take priority? You can be wise about that. Inshallah, you can do both of those things. But you should not be disturbed, you know, by that reality that has occurred. Because Allah willed it to be. So look for the wisdom of God in everything that happens. In everything that you do. Okay, is that all right? Is that fine? Yes, mashallah.
I have a question about
how do we draw the distinction between like being in the present and having self-scrutiny and being neurotic?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And then taking it too far and then not being present because now you're in your head and you're worried.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're over-examining yourself.
Right. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but I don't know, are there any people here who are? But my intuition, it might be wrong, would be that people that are neurotic are almost never in the present moment. And they are not in themselves. They live in worlds of illusions, you know, worlds of fears and anxieties, and often traumas that they've had in the past, you know, that have brought them to where they are. You know, to be healthy, you know, you need to get in yourself. You need to be aware of yourself, even to be able to track sensation in yourself. How do your feet feel? A lot of people are not aware of their feet. How do your hands feel? A lot of people don't do that at all. You know, they live out of their bodies, especially people who have been extremely abused. And, you know, there's certain types of people that this is very common in them. They live out of themselves. One of the things that often makes men tough is that they are not in themselves. They don't sense things, they don't feel things. And, you know, men in a lot of cultures, we're supposed to be tough, right? We're supposed to be able to suffer. We're supposed to be able to, you know, to get through anything that happens, no matter how difficult it is. You know, but, you know, that can be very harmful for them. You know, because of the fact that you need to be able to sense. And, you know, you need to be able to feel pain. You need to be able to live with it. You know, but if you don't feel pain, you don't feel pleasure. You know, if you don't feel hurt, you don't feel happiness. And so, you know, in the reality of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, you know, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam had, if it's proper to say, an empathy, you know, an ability to relate to others and to their sufferings and to their happiness that is beyond anything that you and I can imagine. And the Prophet suffers. You know, لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ. There has certainly come to you a messenger from yourselves. عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَلِدْتُمْ. Whom it is very difficult. It is very difficult for him. عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَلِدْتُمْ. The trouble that you face. The trouble that you undergo. That he suffers with you. He suffers because of you. Maybe you don't even feel that suffering. Because of the fact that, you know, you're not aware of what you're doing. Harisun alaykum, who is intent, you know, for your well-being. And, you know, some of our commentators, like Ibn Ashur, may Allah have mercy upon him, he says this part of the verse was revealed about the disbelievers. Abu Jahl, Abu Lahab. You know, even though they're dead at this time. But, you know, to those, because this is at the end of the Prophet's life, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. This verse is at the end of Surah Tawbah, the ninth surah, which is also the last. So the Prophet is about to leave, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He's about to go into the world of Barzakh, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, where he's alive there. You know, but it's saying, you know, as, you know, a farewell, that a prophet came to you, Quraysh, the Arabs, Azizun alayhi ma anittum, that it was burdensome, difficult for him that you faced this trouble, that you disbelieved in him, that you made war against him, that you insulted him, not because of himself, but because of you. The prophet would have loved that they all believed. Harisun alaykum, who is intent for your well-being. And bil mu'mineen, regarding the believers, ra'ufur rahim. That's why Ibn Ashur says the first part of the verse is not about the mu'mineen, even though the Prophet is, he cares about you especially, but you're well off. You pray five times a day. You make salat on the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. You're on the path to the garden. You're on the path to forgiveness. You will be all right. But what about the people who turned away? So the Prophet has this incredible capacity to feel. And he is saddened by what ought to sadden a normal person. Neurotic people are not like that at all, are they? They're not like that. Neurotic people cannot relate to other people. They cannot relate to the present moment. They can't be in it. You know, so, you know, to get in yourself, to get in your breaths, to be in your body, to be aware, you know, even of things like your feet. Are your feet cold right now? Okay, you know, it's good for you to know that. You know, that you have so many nerves in your lips, in the tips of your finger, in the palm of your hand, in the bottom of your feet. You know, you have so much feeling there. So, like, what do your lips feel like? You know, what do the tips of your fingers feel like? What do the palms of your hands feel like? What do your feet feel like? And this is very good for your health. In natural medicine, in natural healing, to get in yourself, to be aware of your sensations. Are your ears ringing? Are they not ringing? Oh, I wasn't paying attention to that. And again, it's like, this is not neurotic, but this is getting anchored in the self. Getting anchored in the self. Being aware of it. And then, if you are aware of yourself, and you're aware of the way you feel, like, I feel pain, and it hurts me. I feel pain in my stomach. I don't right now. But let's say that I did. I feel that pain. You know, pay attention to the pain. Of course, you can do something to get rid of it. But this enables you to relate to other people. And in our relations with each other, one of the things that often makes those relations very difficult is that we don't relate to each other. We don't feel the pain of other people. We don't feel the joy of other people. We don't relate to where other people are. May Allah give us the ability to do that. And if we are that way, it means also we don't relate to ourselves. You know, I've got to be tough. You know, I've got to buckle down. Right? I can't feel this. Well, you know, if that's the way that you want to live life, that's the way a lot of people do. That's how they get ahead. But there's a payoff in that. And it means that you can no longer feel the good emotions or the bad emotions. You know, and a man, you know, should be a person who can cry. A man should be a person who can laugh. A man should be a person who feels the pain of his children, or his wife, or his mother. You know? And who cares about that. And who also feels the joy and the pleasure. Okay? And that's the way that a real warrior is too. The great warriors of the past, like the Sahaba with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. These were not people who were tough and cruel. No. These were people who were very feeling, but they were courageous. You know, and they could suffer. And they could also feel joy. They lived in themselves. They took the whole reality in. So may Allah enable us to be that way. And especially in things like marital relations. You know, you need to be able to relate to your spouse. And your spouse needs to be able to relate to you. And then the relation remains always as it was on the first day. Because it's not like old. You know, it's like, you know, because we become used to things. We're in this state of elation, which is a great gift. You know, to love your wife, to love your husband. That is a beautiful thing. Okay, and then it gets old. And that really means that we are not in the present moment. You know, that we are now living somewhere else. We are taking things for granted. We are overlooking blessings. And we're not feeling. You know, so again, in every breath you breathe, you know, there is a destiny that God has fulfilled. So be aware of the miraculous nature of the present moment. You know, you see people, for example, who go through experiences, you know, like maybe they almost die, they get really sick, maybe they go through a dangerous situation in which their life was threatened. They might be refugees, for example. You know, I know of refugees who, in the Muslim world, who lived on the verge of death for weeks. At night, there are people looking for you. At daytime, there are airplanes flying over them, looking for them. You know, I know a group of them, they're from Ahlul Bayt in Eritrea, beautiful people. And like one night, they had to escape from Eritrea to the Sudan. And they're being, you know, hunted by, you know, the communists, by the Ethiopians, by others, by day and night. And one night, you know, they find themselves almost surrounded by the communists, who will kill them, take the women away, and kill the men. And the men were so frightened that some of them couldn't control themselves. And one of the women, who was a great waliya, mashallah, she just said that, make salat on the Prophet. Sallu ala nabi. Make salat on the Prophet. And they began to do that, and then they came back to themselves. They remembered their Lord. They remembered their beautiful Prophet, and they were delivered miraculously. Okay, but these are people who have lived through the most terrible of situations. But you know, inshallah, you know, Allah brings them out, and you know, may Allah make us people, inshallah, who are. But you know, after an experience like that, I lost my train of thought. You know, then it's like the world, you see it in its beauty. How beautiful the sunrise is today. I thought I wouldn't even make it to this morning. And now that I'm free and I'm safe, and my children, my family, my mother is safe. Now look at the sunrise. How beautiful it is. It's as if I see it for the first time. All of that is to be in the present moment. I remember when I was young, when I was about 15, I climbed up in a big tree, it was 60 feet tall, and we had this habit that we'd take this particular type of tree, and we would hold onto it, and we would swing out from it, and the tree would bend over, and then it would get us about 10 feet from the ground, we'd drop off. You know, it was a lot of fun. Then the tree would, whoosh, like you're flying, you know, just hold on to these trees, they were sweet gum trees, and we would just jump out from them. We would say, Mowogo, big bear, that's in Cherokee. And then we would jump out from the tree, and the tree would take us down to the ground, and then we'd jump off and pop back up. And so I climbed up in this big tree, 60 feet tall, and it had been raining for weeks, and I grabbed onto the top of the tree and said Mowogo and jumped off, and it snapped off like a piece of celery. Because it was filled with water. I didn't think about that. So here I am falling 50 feet to the ground. And as I'm falling, I just see the sky. And my whole life goes in front of me. And like, how long did I fall? How many seconds? And I hit the ground, boom, on my back, my head. There's a stump next to me. If I'd hit that, I would have been killed immediately. But it's like my whole life went in front of me. So what was happening? I was in the present moment. And if you can get in the present moment, you will discover amazing things. The present moment is what really exists. And most of us don't live there. You know, I've got this appointment at 12:30, right? I've got to do this thing then. And, you know, our minds are so preoccupied with things. We are diverted. And we need not to be diverted. And again, you need to be aware of yourself, of the miracle of yourself, of how you feel. And this is good for your nervous system also. And live in your breaths. Breathe in. And don't take these breaths for granted. It may be the last one you have. You know? Isn't that beautiful? Breathe in. Doesn't that feel good? It does. Breathe out. And you purify yourself in that. You're alive. Okay? So may Allah bring us to life. And may Allah enable us to live in the present moment. And to be aware of how miraculous the present moment is. And if we can be that way, then humbly, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala, we can relate to each other. You know, that we're, you know, the other person is not just an object. You know, whose name you know or you don't know. Whose face you know or you don't know. You know, who can benefit me or maybe not benefit me. No, then this is also a creature of Allah. This is also someone that Allah willed to create. And, you know, this person is extremely important before God. So whether, you know, they're cultured or not cultured, whether they're from your ethnic group or not, whether they're compatible with you or not, this is not the issue. God created this servant and put this servant in front of me. So give them yourself for that moment, as long as you're there. And this is why also with the awliya, that they're able to see you. And they're able to see what you need. Not because that they have incredible gifts of vision that other people don't have, but because they have the gift to live in the present moment, to live in their breaths, and therefore to be aware of what is happening before them. You know, the Prophet says, ittaqi farasat al-mu'min. You know, be aware of the, what we would say, the farasa, the ability of the believer to read faces. Because the believer, some believers, they can look at you and they can tell a lot about you. You can do that too, maybe. They can even say that, oh, you're from so and so, and you are from such and such a place. I've seen that a lot. Okay? And where do they get that? They get that by being in the marvelous reality of the present moment. Of seeing everything that happens around them as the handiwork of God. Okay, that's what this is. God created this moment. God willed this to be. Yes?
I don't know how to formulate this, but if, say, in the everyday function of the world when you're working, for example, if you feel a sense of, say, wastefulness at moments in time, during that period of time, is that a sign of ingratitude, and how can you work on, or discontentment, and how do you?
So you're saying that, like, if you're at your work and so forth and you feel you're wasting your time, like you have to...
Yeah, you feel like you're wasting your time, so you don't feel like you're...
And in any case, you have to always remember, أقام العبادة فيما أراد. God established His servants where He willed them to be. So, you know, you're working at your job, however wonderful or mundane your job may be. And this is also an obligation. Right? And you also have an obligation to do your job the best that you can possibly do your job. So if you feel like you're wasting your time, I would say that, you know, that's probably, you know, it means that you're not really aware of, you know, what you're doing. And, you know, you need to do what you're called upon to do the best that you possibly can. And this should not keep you from the remembrance of God. And this should not keep you from being a source of goodness and light to your colleagues at work and so forth. But the whole notion of wasting time, you know, is a notion that I think always reflects a certain degree of negligence and lack of awareness. And, you know, a lot of times we spend hours, maybe at the airport, you know, you missed your flight, or your flight was delayed, you're sitting there for another 6 hours. So Allah willed that to be, and you just get into it. Inshallah, may Allah make us like that. Make us people who live in the present moment, who are aware of what is before us, who do not live in our own worlds that we create. We live in the world that God created, that includes me and you, not just me. Ameen. في كل نفس تبديه له فيك قدر يمضيه. In every breath that you bring to light, you know, every breath that you take, God has a destiny in you that He has fulfilled. You have a question?
Yes.
Okay.
During playing sports, sometimes.
During what?
Playing sports.
Okay.
There sometimes comes a, I mean, perhaps other players can corroborate right, that, but there comes a, like sometimes a point of time where you feel time basically stops, and and you can see what everyone's doing, where the ball is going, and where you need to place it, and everything stops, and you feel like I know what I'm doing right now. is that the living in the moment?
Well, what is your first name?
Ahmed.
Ahmed. What's your last name?
Ahmed.
It is what?
Ahmed.
I remember now. I met you at RAS last year, right? Yeah. So his question is about sports. He must be very good at sports, whatever sport he plays. But he's talking about, I guess, what people call being in the zone. It's like, you practice the sport a lot, and you play it a lot. And then there come times that athletes witness where it's like all of a sudden time stops. And they don't think about what they're doing. And everything goes perfectly. You know, the quarterback goes back, and it's almost as if he doesn't have to look. He just throws the ball, and, you know, it goes right into the hands of the receiver. Of course, he's run the play so many times. He knows exactly what the receiver's going to be. Or in basketball, the same thing. It's like you begin to play, and you don't have to even, you don't have to even look. You just know it. You throw the ball, and the guy's right there, and he takes it and puts it in the hoop. So this is a very interesting reality. And I think we call it being in the zone. Some people call that being in the zone. And you have that in professions. You have that in art. You have it in music. You have it in poetry. You have it in so many things. You know, Coleridge wakes up. He has this dream of Xanadu, you know, in Xanadu did Kublai Khan, a wealthy pleasure dome decree, where Elf, the secret river, ran beneath the sunless sea. And he didn't even write the poem, it just came to him, just keeps writing until somebody knocks on the door, and then he forgets the poem, and the poem ends. But that whole quality of being in the zone, that's very interesting. First of all, it's a type of karama. It's a type of karama. An honorary miracle. And, you know, it comes from, you know, that if you discipline yourself and you break your custom, then God will break customs for you. So when you're exercising, you're practicing a sport, you're pushing yourself to the limit, right? Like, I can run faster. I can run faster. I can go harder. I can, some of the greatest basketball players, how many times do they shoot a particular shot? How many thousands of times? Over and over and over again. They're pushing themselves to the limit. And they are breaking their customs. And then God breaks the custom for you. So He gives you this miraculous quality of now being in the present. When you're in the present, there's no time. It's like timeless. And then you can do these things amazingly. You know? And so that's a very good question. That's very appropriate. It's very appropriate. Being in the present, being in the timeless. And again, people like Imam an-Nawawi, whom we mentioned yesterday. You know, Imam an-Nawawi, he only lived for a little longer than 40 years. He lived a very short life. And when he died, may Allah be pleased with him, scholars got together all the beautiful things he had written, the voluminous books that he had written. They got them all together and they determined that he had essentially, he had on the average written like a chapter of edited knowledge for every day of his life. How? Ibn Asakir, who writes the History of Damascus, which is a huge manuscript. You know, I've seen it stacked in one of my teachers' houses. You know, the stack goes really high, it's maybe 6 feet tall. And he said, how could Ibn Asakir write a book like this in his lifetime? And he's doing other things. He said, for us just to edit this book, we'd have to have half a dozen full-time editors working how many years? But that's because these are people who lived in the present moment. And when you live in the present moment, you get barakah. You get blessing. And, you know, blessing has a timeless quality to it. You know, if Allah gives you barakah in your time, you can do in your time amazing things that other people can't do. And may Allah bless us with that. So you see someone like Imam An-Nawawi, who teaches how many classes a day? I think 14 at least. And, you know, he is also worshipping. He's serving the community. You know, he's doing all these things. But it's like time for him stands still because of where he is. You know, when you're in the present moment, you know, you are in the moment of God. You're in, inshallah, the day of God. Yawmullah, ayyamullah. You know, and then time is filled with blessing. When we turn away from God and we live in the world of our illusions, then time is not very blessed. And it's like you never have enough time. And a lot of us actually, especially if we compare ourselves to our mothers and fathers in earlier generations, you know, we have lots of free time. We say we don't. You know, we're so busy. But like, you know, what about your mother and father? You know, they didn't work from 8 to 5. You know, a lot of them worked from sun up deep into the night. And yet they still had time. You know, I know of people in the traditional Muslim world, in Eritrea, again, because I have a lot of my beautiful teachers are from Eritrea, who lived in the mountains of Eritrea. And they essentially didn't sleep. They didn't have to, you know, they would sleep just a few hours. But they lived in a very healthy environment. They ate very good food. They studied the Quran and they did dhikr at night around the big fire they had in the center of the village. They worked with their crops and their animals in the daytime. They taught students who came from miles away. And they knew knowledge. They had great knowledge. And they said, and the children would play all night. They had games they played. You know, dangerous games in some cases, but they had lots of fun. You know, and it's like they said that we didn't feel a need to sleep other than maybe just a few hours. You know, if you get sleepy, then you go sleep and you wake up. And but it's barakah. It's barakah in their food. Everything they had was halal. You know, that's what they were focusing on. And that's another thing, to be in your breath, to be in yourself, to be in the moment. You want to eat what is halal and earn what is halal. May Allah enable us to purify our wealth and, you know, to eat what is good and what is pure, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. And again, you know, we talk about doing things by God, you know, doing things billah and doing things lillah, for God. And, you know, when you work by God, then you get in the present moment. And then you have great blessing. Then you rely on Allah. And inshallah, He gives you success in what you do. When you rely on yourself, you know, I can do this, and I've got all this ability, and, you know, I'm so smart. You know, then the barakah is maybe not there. And you may succeed, but in the end it may not produce the fruit that you want. So anyway, this is a beautiful hikmah. Yes?
Sadiq, there's a question online. Mm-hmm. Brother Yusuf from the United States is asking, if feeling for another leads to one's sickness, is feeling for others still considered praiseworthy? Is feeling for others still considered praiseworthy?
Does he mean by that that, you know, you feel so strong, you know, for other people suffering that it affects you and makes you sick? I don't have an answer to that right off. But again, it's like, you know, some of the great saints, like Uwais al-Qawni, may Allah be pleased with him, who's the greatest of the successors, you know, that anything that pained the Prophet pained him to the utmost. You know, so this is a quality of his greatness. And, you know, we ask Allah to give us strength and to give us health, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. But, you know, may he make us people who can relate to others and who can feel what others feel. And this is one of the highest qualities of all, to be able to relate to other people as they are, you know, and to see them where they are, and to care for them as they are. And all of that reflects that you also care for yourself, that you're also in yourself. And inshallah, you're healthy and strong. You know, the fact that you can feel pain, that doesn't mean you're weak, and it doesn't mean you're sickly. And the fact that you, you know, can feel joy, it doesn't mean that there's something deficient. It means that there's something, you know, perfect about you. There's something complete, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. So, inshallah, may Allah make us strong. May Allah make us healthy. These are qualities that give you health, not sickness. You know, but they do enable you to see the other as the other is in the eyes of God. And that is a beautiful gift. May Allah give us that. To value the other, to value yourself, to value everything you do, every breath that you take. Amen. Yes?
Just a quick question about the word saint that you use. I'm not quite familiar with what you mean by the word saint when you use it.
And so this question is about the word saint. And I'm using the word saint here for wali, for the word wali. And we were saying yesterday also that one of the things that I would really love to see us do is, you know, to get together English-speaking scholars, men and women, and to work on translation. What's the best way to translate different expressions? But the word saint in English translates the Hebrew word for saint. And the Hebrew word for saint in the biblical tradition is Qiddish. Qiddis. Qiddish. And the saint in the Hebrew tradition, which is the Judaic tradition and the Christian tradition, is the man or woman who is so pure and so purified that they live in the constant presence, the hadra of Quddus. They live in the presence of God, you know, in God in all His infinite perfection. And we don't use that word hardly at all in the Islamic tradition. You know, we use the word wali. And the word wali means to be close to someone, and to be their friend, and to be their helper and their protector. The word wali is a very special word. You know, when you talk about this discrepancy or this difference, you know, I believe that we confront here a major difference between the Islamic reality, you know, that reflects our Prophet and his companions. His companions who loved him and who obeyed him in everything. Anything they're told to do, they just do it. They don't have to ask any other questions. Because they were that way, then Islam remains very merciful. And Islam remains very simple. So the wali, the saint in Islam, is any man or woman who believes. Any man or woman who believes. And then we go higher and higher and higher. And, you know, to come to something like Hablatul Quddus, you know, when the nest of your heart becomes the presence of God in all His perfection, that's like the highest state of sainthood. And in the biblical definition, that is sainthood. Like, until you get there, you're not really a saint. And one of the reasons for that is because in the history of Moses, peace be upon him, and his people disobeyed time and again. And any time they're asked to do something, but how do we do that? And would this be right? Would that be right? They ask all these questions. And they're told, for example, to sacrifice the cow. And if they just sacrificed the cow, it would have been enough. But like, what color? What age? You know, and like, you know, what? Tell us more, tell us more. Okay, now you've told us the truth. So they made it so difficult, they could almost not find a cow to sacrifice. This is the reality of that tradition. Even, for example, for us, iman, faith. Iman means literally to enter into eman, to enter into the state, you know, of being protected, of being safe. Okay, and you get the iman just, you know, by believing. Whereas, again, in the biblical tradition, iman, faith, is called sadaq. Sadaq, sidq. Sidq is the highest degree of faith. And so it's because the bar was put very, very high for the people of the book because of the legacy of disobeying their prophets. And of rebelling against the prophets. So the word saint, I use it because of the fact that some of our scholars use it, and because anyone coming from the biblical tradition, Jew or Christian, they use the word saint. So that's the reason why I choose it. But again, whether we should use that word or another word, I would be open to discuss that. But the fact that the word saint is sanctus, is sanctus. Sanctus, which means purified, or saintly, means to be muqaddas, to be qiddis. That's where they get the word. Okay, how are we coming with time? I'm being really slow.
You have about 20 minutes.
I have about 20 minutes, so sorry that I went so slowly on this. Inshallah, let's look at the next hikmah that we're going to look at today. And this is 32. He says, may Allah be pleased with him. تشوفك إلى ما بطن فيك من الغيوب خير لك من تشوفك إلى ما حجب عنك من الغيوب. So Ibn Atta Allah says, تشوفك.
You know, your desire to know, you know, your you know, looking forward to knowing, your what's a better way to say that? Your anticipation, you know, tashawufuka, you're looking forward to knowing, you're desiring to know. Ma batana fika min al-ghuyub, the faults that are hidden in you is better for you than your looking forward to know. Ma hujiba anka min al-ghuyub, the realities of the unseen that are veiled from you. Okay? Did you get that? So, tashawuf. What's a good translation of tashawuf?
Trying to see.
It's trying to see, right? Trying to see. Looking, like, at tashawuf. You know, I at tashawuf ila dhali. I'm looking forward to this. I want to do this. Okay, but tashawufuka, it's like your desire to see, your desire to know. the faults in you that are hidden from you. You know, this is what is good for you. This is better for you than tashawwufika ila ma hujiba anka min al-ghuyub, than your desire to know what has been hidden from you of the secrets of the unseen. Now this is another really beautiful hikmah. And again, one of the things that Ibn Ata'Allah is always doing is to orient us properly and to make sure that we root our understanding and the practice of the religion in what is pleasing to God and what manifests a true servanthood and true sincerity. So many times when we think of the spiritual path, we think of the amazing knowledge that men and women of the path gain. You know, that, for example, they can interpret dreams. You know, I know a sheikha, who, if you tell her a dream, it's just like reading the newspaper. She can just tell you what it means, just like that. She doesn't have to think about it. It's as if you gave her a newspaper and she just reads it to you. Although the dreams are often so different than anything you ever believed, anything you expected. And they're amazing. So she has then this secret of the unseen, that she knows what dreams mean. That's a wonderful thing. And we know that many people on the path, they have dreams. They are able to interpret dreams. They know about the way that reality is structured. They know the secrets of the self. Maybe they even know secrets about you. Maybe they're even able to see the future. That this person will grow up to be a great scholar, or whatever. And a lot of times, because things like that are so extraordinary, and things like that are also often very illuminating, they make our religion, they show us the profundity and the depth, of our religion. It's like, this is what is really important. That I want to know the unseen. I want to be able to interpret dreams. I want to be able to see into the future. I want to be able to, know how to help people and cure people and so forth. But that's not what the path is about. Those are all gifts. And in many cases, they are honorary miracles. And they are also tests. Because if you're given this ability, will you still remain humble? Will you still remain God's servant? Or, will this go to your head? And then you'll think that you're better than other people, because that does happen a lot. So the reality of the path is self-knowledge. And this is the greatest gift of all, to know yourself. And to know myself is not just to know, the secrets of how the self works and how it relates to the world before this world, but especially to know our faults. That this is my fault. That maybe I don't live in the present moment. Maybe I don't, fulfill my obligations. I'm always looking, at other things that I can do instead of doing the things that are unpleasant. So the greatest gift that God can give you is to give you knowledge of your faults. And, of course, also to give you a heart, that is happy to learn that. Because most of us are not that way. We don't want anyone to tell us our faults. And we never forget the insult, that they mention to us our faults. Like, somebody tells you that, well, you're a monotone, or whatever. Everything you say is a monotone. It's like, oh, I didn't ever think of that. Then you think about, like, why did they tell me this? I mean, that's not very important, is it? But the thing is that we don't like to be told our faults, as a rule. And when you tell people their faults, you have to be very careful how you do that. And usually the saints don't do that. they just opened that door for you to see. But, you know, when we are proud and arrogant and we think that we are, you know, something that we're not, you know, that is a great impediment. You know, that, as, you know, for us to know God and to know God's power and to relate to God, you know, we have to be aware of how weak we are, how fallible we are, how foolish we are, you know, how ignorant we are, how insignificant we are on our own, but for the fact that God has honored us. So this is the point that he's making here, that this path, the path of Sufism, which is the science of ihsan, of moral perfection, that this is not about your having powers of being able to fly through the air or walk on water or cure the sick or to have a dua that is answered or to be able to take care of people's problems or to give them counsels or to interpret dreams or to have dreams or to predict the future or anything like that. That's not what it's about. This is about being sincere and knowing yourself and knowing your limitations and being honest with yourself, you know, and turning to God and relying on God, that who am I? I am hollow. I have nothing. I am incapable. I am ignorant. I am fallible. I make mistakes. Any good that comes from me is a gift of God that comes through me. Okay, then this is what will benefit you. This is what is good for you. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. So may Allah enable us to be people who scrutinize themselves. Again, the sister asked that question earlier. But that's really important, to be able to look in yourself. A moment of thought is better than 70 years of worship without thought. You know, and you know, when you lay down in bed, when you're alone by yourself, when you don't have anything to do, look into yourself. And it's very good for you to see how empty you are, how weak you are, how unpresuming you should be. You know, beware of the maker of claims. You know, ittaqi man idda'a. Beware of the maker of claims. You know, من أشار إلى نفسه فقد ادعى. Whoever points to themselves, me, they have made a false claim. You know that, you know, you have got, the more that you are the humble servant of God who has no claims, the greater you are in the eyes of God. You know, من تواضع لله رفعه الله. Whoever puts themselves down for the sake of God, in humility, God lifts them up, God honors them. So this is the path. And again, you do not know God until you know yourself. But the most important thing you know about yourself, are not like, oh, what is the relation of the nafs to the aql, to the qalb, to the ruh, to the sir? Okay, that's part of you too. That's beautiful also. But it's like, what are my faults? What are my weaknesses? Where am I wrong? Where are my blind spots? What is it that I'm overlooking? What is it that I'm hiding from myself? And again, you want to know this not to be unable, not to be depressed, and not to be discouraged, but in order to be thankful to God. Because God made you beautiful in the eyes of people. God hid this from others. And God gives you great gifts. You're alive. You can breathe. You can see. You can think. You know, you can make good grades. You've probably got a degree. You've got a good job. Whatever. So you be thankful for that. That these are all gifts of God and nothing else. And, you know, in anything that we do, anything we seek to do, that we do it by God, for God. I cannot do it You cannot do it. I cannot accomplish anything. But Allah Azza wa Jal, if we will be His true servants, inshallah, He will accomplish these things for us. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. Okay? How's our time? Are we out of time?
No, we have another 10 minutes.
Another 10 minutes. All right. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask? No questions? Yes.
Sheikh, when we're reading sometimes some of the writings of the awliya that are starting to come out in translation or in Arabic, sometimes there are things, passages where some of the writers will say things that look like their claims about, you know, who they are in relation to others. Or is there any advice you can give us about like how we should read those things when we come across them?
Mm-hmm. On the path, He does what He wills to do. So, if someone like Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani, may Allah be pleased with him, he says, رَقَبَتِ هَذِهِ قَدَمِ هَذِهِ فِي رَقَبَتِ كُلِّ وَلِيٍّ لِلَّهِ, that this foot of mine is on the neck of every wali of Allah. That's a huge claim. And that's a claim that he did not want to make, and that he took no pride in taking, but that God directed him to say, that you must say this. This must be known. This must be in the record. And the awliya had said that before him. They said that there will be this wali who will say, قَدَمِ هَذِهِ فِي رَقَبَتِ كُلِّ وَلِيٍ لِلَّهِ. So we call him Sultan al-Awliya. And we don't have any issues on that. No Shadiri, Naqshbandi, Alawi, Darqawi, anything. Disputes that, Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani, ala ra'si wal ayn. So sometimes Allah takes the man or woman who has no claims and who would make no claims, and He says, make this claim. And sometimes He warns them because they won't do it. I know great sheikhs, who were told, you have to tell people that you are a sheikh. And they didn't want to do that. And the Prophet would come to them and tell them, you must tell them. Maybe he tells them 3 times. And then finally they do it. And, so this, these are exceptions to the rule. But the people who are making those claims, if they are real, then it's not like they want to make them. But still, the rule in tasawwuf is beware of the maker of claims. Because this man, like Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani, this is a man who will give you everything, who will take from you nothing. And he is there for the people, and he's courageous and fearless. And he puts his life on the line before the kings and before the princes and the robbers and everything else. He doesn't care. So, you know that he is worthy of trust in this. But then you have other people that are charlatans and frauds. Wherever you have gold, then you're going to also have counterfeit gold, right? Wherever, you have a need for doctors, you're going to have false doctors, quacks. So you have to be able to distinguish. And in general, among us, we don't make claims. And, that's the general rule. And I know most of the awliya that I have been blessed to be with in my life, they would never say anything about themselves. They won't say they're a sheikh or anything. They have no claims whatsoever. So, there are exceptions to these things, but that's the general rule. Did you have a question? Okay. Did any of the women here have questions? Yeah.
So, we have a couple of online questions.
Okay.
What is the process of self-knowledge, and how can we go about learning about our faults?
What is the process of self-knowledge, and how do we go about learning about our faults? Maybe, how many minutes do we have?
Six minutes.
So maybe we can introduce the next hikmah.
Okay,
and that helps to answer that question.
Okay.
So the next question that I wanted, the next hikmah that I wanted to look at is number 35. And here he says, أَصْلُ كُلِّ مَعْصِيَةٍ وَغَفْلَةٍ وَشَهْوَةٍ الرِّضَى عَنِ النَّفْسِ. وأصل كل طاعة ويقظة وعفة عدم الرضا منك عنها. So he says that the basis, the root of every act of disobedience and of negligence and of shahwa, of unpraiseworthy desire, is a ridha aninnafs, is to be content with yourself, to be content with the nafs, like I am really good, I am strong, healthy, capable, I can speak, I can solve problems, I can do this, in my field there's no one like me. Okay, a ridha aninnafs. So being content with yourself, this is the source of all evil. Again, he said before, the best thing for you to know is your faults. This opens up for you the door of good. The worst thing for you is to not know your faults and to not want to know them and to, to hide, to cover over them. So he says that the basis of every act of disobedience, every act of negligence, every blameworthy desire is contentment with the self. وَأَصْلُ كُلِّ طَاعَةٍ وَيَقَظَةٍ وَعِفَّةٍ. And the basis of every act of obedience and of wakefulness, of being awake, being aware, and عِفَّةٍ, and of chastity. And chastity here means to not do the thing that you want to do, to not do the thing that blameworthy desire calls you. So it's the opposite of shahwa, iffa. And it can be sexual chastity, but it refers to all types of things. Like, for example, I don't want to give money. I want to hold on to my money. That's a shahwa. And it is blameworthy. And iffa, is to give the money, to be able to give it. Iffa is not restricted just to issues of sexual morality. It's everything. Iffa is to hold back from doing the thing that you would be inclined to do because it's wrong, and doing the thing that is opposite of that because it's right. That's iffa. So iffa is a great quality. The basis of every act of obedience, every act of wakefulness, and every act of iffah, that's a really hard word to translate. We often translate it as chastity. But again, it's much broader than that. Chastity for us, is restricted to sexual morality. Is adam ridha minka anha. Is for you not to be content, with yourself. That I'm not happy with myself. And I am aware of my faults. And I am aware of my incapacities. Okay? Then that leads to obedience. That leads to wakefulness and awareness. That's what brings the Quran to life in your heart. That's what brings the Hadith to life in your heart. That's what enables you to understand. And that's what enables you to do the right thing, as difficult as it may be. But this is a really beautiful wisdom. Number 35. And then he says in the same wisdom, لِأَن تَصْحَبَ جَاهِلًا لَا يَرْضَى عَن نَفْسِهِ خَيْرٌ لَكَ مِنْ أَن تَصْحَبَ عَالِمًا يَرْضَى عَن نَفْسِهِ. So he says, for you to keep the company. So company then is very important. How do I know the faults of myself? How do I improve myself and purify myself? One of the most important things is company. The believer is the mirror of the believer. That, you reflect me, I reflect you. We benefit each other. We pull each other spiritually. Company is really important. You know, you will be like the people whose company you keep. You know, I'm a coward, and I would like not to be a coward. I'd like to be able to be brave. And so how can I do that? Keep the company of brave people, of courageous people. You'll become courageous. I am miserly. I love my money. It's hard for me to give it up. If only I could be generous. How do I do that? Keep the company of generous people. And you'll become generous. This is amazing. And nefsu li nefsi tasrif. You know, ourselves steal from each other. So you have generosity, and I need it. So my nefs will go and pick your pocket. But give me some generosity. You know, we become like each other. You know, birds of a feather flock together. We become like, as if we were all the same species of bird or of animal. See, so company is really important. Whose company do you keep? For you to keep the company of an ignorant man or woman, you know, who can't tell you the tafsir of this surah, and who doesn't know how many are the obligations of wudu, and doesn't know, you know, shurut al-sahha and shurut al-wujub, you know, the conditions of validity, the conditions of obligation of these things, and maybe they don't even know Arabic very well, maybe they don't know it at all. You know, for you to keep the company of an ignorant person who is not content with themselves is better for you than to keep the company of a scholar, a religious scholar, hafiz of the Quran, hafiz of hadith. You know, he knows everything about fiqh, and he knows the seerah, and he knows everything, or she. You know, but they are content with themselves. In other words, like, you know, do you know who I am? Do you know who you're talking to? I studied with so and so and so. I've got ijazah in this. You better respect me. You know, look up to me. It's like, who are you filled with yourself? Knowledge becomes the greatest veil of all. If the knowledge is not based on humility. And then he says after that, فَأَيُّ عِلْمٍ لِعَالِمٍ يَضَّى عَنْ نَفْسِهِ. Because what knowledge does a scholar have who is content with himself or herself? In other words, they miss the point. You know, all of this knowledge that the prophets gave us is about the grandeur of God, not the grandeur of myself. And who am I compared to the Prophet ﷺ? And who am I compared to the Sahaba of the Prophet ﷺ and the saints? And yet they are people that are utterly humble. They are utterly humble and giving. They have no self. You know, when Abu Yazid al-Bistami, may Allah be pleased with him, you know, he said, Allah, how can I come to you? You know, and then he heard a voice that said, leave yourself behind and come. Yeah, leave your nafs behind and come. Okay, so, you know, don't be content with yourself. And again, he said, like, can you accept criticism? Can you accept advice? Can you accept admonition? You know, can you deal with people who don't treat you very well? Can you tolerate situations that are difficult? It's like, if you can, then Allah bless you. Because inshallah, you are a humble man or a humble woman. You're not filled with yourself. You know, so great good will come from you, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. And if we're not that way, may Allah make us that way. And then he said, وَأَيُّ جَهْلٍ لِجَاهِلٍ لَا يَضَّعْ نَفْسِهِ. And what ignorance does an ignorant person have who is not content with himself? In other words, he's got knowledge. Even though he might be a fish monger, you know, a person who sells fishes. You know, he sells fishes in the street or oranges or whatever, pushes his cart and can't speak Arabic properly, can't speak anything properly. But, you know, he's humble. He's not proud. You know, he is the servant of God. So you would be better to keep the company of the fishmonger than of the great Hafiz, who is nothing but ego. You know, and serve me and bring me this food and bring me that. You know, I know of two Hafiz who were brought from a Muslim country, you know, to a person's house in the United States for Ramadan. And they were young Hafiz, but again, it's like they didn't get the right training. And you know, they'll go and recite the Quran, but then it's like, you have to bring us pizzas, and you have to bring us this, and they ran up thousands of dollars on the telephones, making international phone calls to their friends back home, and everything was, give me this, give me that, and treat me right, I'm Hafiz. So it's like, yeah, you're a Hafiz, you know, may Allah protect you. Because what did you get from his book other than the sounds? You know, if you don't become a person who lives the Quran and who is accessible to others, you should be going to get pizza for them. You should be cooking for them. And the Prophet ﷺ, who is the best of creation, the most beautiful, the most perfect human being who was ever created and ever existed, there was not in him an ounce of pride. You know, what is my knowledge? Is it greater than his? My knowledge comes through him. So, you know, keep company. And again, may Allah remove from every one of us all of the illusions of the self. All of the delusions of the self. And everything that fills us with our ego. And the nafs is really difficult. You know, the nafs will entrap you. You know, you strive to overcome the nafs, and you do. And then it comes back in another disguise, and you don't recognize it, and it takes power over you, and it takes vengeance on you. And that's why men and women who are sincere, you know, but they don't have the right company, they don't keep the right company, they don't seek the right company. They are people who often go very far astray insofar as their self is concerned. They're not able to master it, and their self masters them. So you see them, like in the beginning, maybe they were really beautiful, really sincere, and then they become these ego trippers. You know, that everything they talk about is about them, and you have to do what they say, and you don't dare disagree with them. You know, their opinion is the right one. How do you dare disagree? Who are you to disagree? You see, so, you know, the scholar, despite his or her sacred knowledge, and despite the days and nights that they stayed up memorizing and learning this precious legacy, if they are not cultivated to know their own weakness and their own servanthood and their own humility, then they become veiled. And their veil is one of the thickest and one of the most dangerous veils of all. May Allah make us people who know ourselves and who happily accept admonition and advice, and who want to learn about ourselves, and who want to be set right. And may He fill our hearts with knowledge, and may He enable us to know the Quran, and to know the precious hadith of the Prophet, and to know the seerah, and to love it, and to live it, but never to have an ounce of pride, and never to look at ourselves. And again, the spiritual path is a path of beauty and beautification, because we grow. We become sounder and saner. We become more rooted in reality. Inshallah, we get in the present moment. Okay, but on this path, beware of looking in the mirror. Beware of being infatuated with yourself, because you will become much more beautiful than you are. You will become much more enlightened than you are. You will become much more wonderful than you are. And woe to you, you know, if you take that, let that go to your head. You know, may Allah make us humble and keep us humble. And this is one of the reasons why people are all different. Some people are very humble to begin with. That's their nature. Some of you are that way. Some of you whom I know are that way. Very humble people. You know, I don't think they have an ounce of pride and will ever have an ounce of pride. But other people are not like that. Most of us are not like that. And our nefs, ourselves, are triumphant. You know, that I want to be this, I will be this. And those people, you've got to be brought down. You know, you've got to be brought down to the common earth, the lowlands of humility, where there is no claim, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. May Allah make us that way, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. Forgive me, you know, for going on, you know, and forgive me for anything I've said that is not beneficial, that is repetitive or whatever. We ask Allah Azza wa Jal, you know, to take our words and to make them a gift, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala, that opens our hearts and dispels darkness, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. And, you know, may He make these hours that we have together, something really precious for me and for you, and something we never forget. And may He enable us, you know, to learn this and to practice it. And may He make us selfless people, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. Selfless people, real people, honest people, good people, who don't wear masks, who don't masquerade. You know, that, you know, don't be afraid. I'm not afraid of the truth. Let's not run away from the truth. You know, inshallah, we welcome the truth, bi-ithnillahi ta'ala, the truth about ourselves, about our own deficiencies, about our, and again, Imam Malik, may Allah be pleased with him. He taught his students, you know, say, I do not know. Because I do not know. Whatever I know, my knowledge begins in ignorance and ends in ignorance. You know? And, you know, I do not know is half of knowledge. But most of us today, especially people who have claims to scholarship, to say the words, I do not know, is like saying, you know, to stab yourself, right? Like it'd be easier for them to take a knife and stab themselves and say, I don't know the answer to your question. So may Allah enable us to be humble. May He put on us all the crown of I don't know. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala, and then give us knowledge. You see, you say, I don't know, God will give you knowledge. You say, I am insignificant, God will make you significant. You will say, you know, I am weak, God will make you strong. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. That's the way that works. That's how the knowledge, but you've got to be real about that. You've got to be sincere about that. Bi-ithnillahi ta'ala. May Allah make us that way. اللهم وفقنا لما تحبه وترضاه وجعلنا من عبيدك السعداء وأمتنا على كلمة الهدى علمنا ما ينفعنا ووفقنا للعمل بما علمتنا به واجعل ما نحن فيه خالصا مخلصا لوجهك الكريم يا رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. I think I'm going to have to excuse myself because, you know, we have to, you know, I told about being in the present moment, right? But I've got to do something at 1:30. You know, so inshallah, hope that, you know, maybe we'll see you this evening. And inshallah, if you can come, Allah bless you. Inshallah, we're going to talk about one God, many names. Maybe you can look at that a little bit. Maybe you can read about it, and then we'll try to discuss it. I hope it'll be beneficial. So, wassalamu alaikum.